What is going on? Thanks for tuning in to the MMA podcast. It is June 14th, and as always, a ton to break down. Just a few hours ago, we got official word that I guess the current face of the sport, Conor McGregor, his next fight will not be in mixed martial arts. It will be boxing against Floyd Mayweather, the greatest boxer of our generation. August 26th, going to talk about that. Of course, going to talk about last weekend's card from Auckland, New Zealand. Mark Hunt putting in an impressive performance against Derek Lewis. Mike Goldberg to Bellator, and of course this coming weekend we got UFC Singapore, Holm versus Kohea. Gonna preview that card and more. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA podcast.
That's right. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Lenny Hart, for that beautiful call. Thank you, Smoke Serpent and Eddie Bravo, for letting us use that jam for the intro. And thank you, P Money, for being the co-host on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on with you, dog?
Oh, Big Jake, we're enjoying a wonderful Wednesday out here in SoCal. It's a fantastic June day. Had a lovely time watching the fights last weekend. You know, last night I was cruising around in the vehicle and I had heard some whisperings that Mayweather Promotions had asked for a date in August in Las Vegas. And woke up this morning, and it wasn't until just a couple hours ago we got to chatting. Found out that they asked for that date for a very specific reason, and well, I'll let you get into all the details of that, which I'm very excited to join you and break down, and all the other MMA musings of this week.
You know, it's funny. Earlier this morning, I looked on the MGM Grand website. I looked at hotel rooms at the MGM Grand for August 26th, which was the date that Floyd put in, then rescinded, then resubmitted today, August 26th. This morning, rooms for the 26th were going for $319. This afternoon, rooms were starting at $399. Now it appears that date is sold out, and all the dates around it are now worth $399. It's going to be a circus in Vegas that week. It is going down at the MGM Grand, and for all of the details, one of the people who helped made the money, and a guy who is going to get pretty rich off of this fight, Dana White, he went on UFC tonight on Fox Sports 1. Credit to the UFC on Fox YouTube channel for this clip, and he laid out some of the specifics for what is now official, Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, August 26th at the MGM Grand.
Yeah, but it's done. It's going to be 12 rounds. It will be August 26th at the T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas. And then they're going to wear 10-ounce gloves, 154 pounds, boxing ring. Mayweather Promotions will build the undercard. It will be a boxing event. Showtime is the, they have a deal with Floyd. So I'm trying to throw all the information I can at you. That's about it.
So
no more.
So that is about it, yeah, and pardon me, it's not at the MGM Grand Arena, it's at the T-Mobile Arena. This will be Floyd's first fight at the T-Mobile Arena, just because I believe as of his last fight against Andre Berto, the T-Mobile Arena had yet to be fully constructed. So it's official, I heard first 147 pounds, which I think would have been a win for Floyd, who has usually fought at, I think welterweight in boxing is 147. He weighs in around 147, 146 for most of his last fights against Berto, Pacquiao, and Maidana at welterweight. I think Guerrero was also at welterweight. He fought Canelo at a catchweight of 152. But fighting at 154 seems like a win for Conor. Conor probably would have struggled to hit anything below 150. His last few fights were at either 170 or at 155 in the UFC. So he didn't have any trouble at 155 to fight Eddie. So he shouldn't have any trouble getting to 154. I guess before we really get into the meat of it, because I've kind of refused to talk about it because, you know, I will admit I didn't think it was going to happen. I should have followed the old axiom of follow the money, and there for sure is a lot of money that will be generated. A lot of people are saying that it will be the highest grossing fight of all time. A lot of people are saying Floyd will probably make another $250 million like he did when he fought Manny Pacquiao. Connor could make upwards of nine figures. Gonna be big paydays for everybody involved. What was your first reaction? I guess when you found out that, you know, this isn't the first time that Conor vs. Floyd has made the news. This is probably the fifth or sixth time. There have been whisperings every few months, but nothing has happened until now, when it seems like we have officially a fight on our hands.
Well, I was really surprised. I mean, again, like you're saying, yeah, you got to follow the money. It should make sense. You know, these guys, Dana, Connor, Floyd, all they talk about and all they love is money. So, makes sense. They have the opportunity to put this together, generate hundreds of millions of dollars, take very sizable portions of that for themselves. And, hey, you got some happy people and, heck, happy corporate sponsors, everything like that. So, I suppose we shouldn't be too shocked that it's happening. But for me, I was really, I was just kind of laughing when Dana White said, oh, you know, this is the fight that the people wanted to see. And so I'm in the business of putting together the fights that people want to see. And I don't think anybody really wants to see this fight. I don't know how this fight came about. I think this is probably just a creation between these two guys. They probably met up in Vegas and said, hey, you know what, we should get a fight going on and just start some hype and this, that, and the other. We'll make a ton of money. It'll be a good time. It'll probably be a farce of an event. I'm really not too much looking forward to it. It really doesn't lend any credibility to any party. I don't know. I'm really debating whether or not I should even order it or go to a local watering hole to watch it, just because it's not what I care to see. I don't care to – well, I don't know. I'm more of a mixed martial arts fan than a boxing fan. If there were a finish in this fight, then that would be awesome. I'd love to see that. But, I'm not very hyped for this, really. I'm not making money on it, so.
Yeah, and, the build-up for the fight will be fun, and I think it's almost certain that the build-up for the fight will end up being more entertaining than the fight itself. People saying that Connor could finish him, both fighters have a chance. If Connor can cleanly connect with his left, we've seen the strength of it. We've seen the damage it can do. But the problem, the giant problem here, is that Floyd is the best boxer of our generation, and maybe the best defensive boxer of all time. Even people like Marcos Maidana and Canelo Alvarez, boxers, some of the best boxers in the world, people who've been boxing, only boxing, their entire lives, and have some wicked power themselves. I mean, you know, these are world-class boxers. They couldn't put a finger on Floyd. So you think this guy who has been training kicks and takedowns and jiu-jitsu, I just don't see how Floyd loses. Unless he has aged a shitload since the Berto fight, which was in 2015, which he is getting older. I believe Connor is something like 18 years his youth. I think Connor's like 20, late 20s. Floyd is in his early to mid 40s. Floyd is a world-class athlete, I'm sure has been training, I'm sure has been staying in shape. I really don't see any other result other than a disappointing for the crowd fight where Floyd doesn't get touched. Floyd will probably, I don't know, I do think, you know, Connor will be competent. He won't come out like James Toney did, and in the opposite respect, where a boxer came to fight MMA and they put him up against Randy fucking Couture, and Randy just ragdolled him and finished the fight immediately, and Toney looked absolutely stupid because he didn't even train takedown defense. Connor has trained boxing. Connor can strike. Connor is competent, but Floyd is the master. He is, you know, the best fighter anyone alive has seen, at least when it comes to dodging punches. I mean, the Philly Shell, and just Google Floyd Mayweather Philly Shell, and if you really want to learn some stuff about boxing, just study about how he uses his shoulder and just can, I mean, the defense he puts forth in fights is unreal. I don't see how Connor's gonna touch him. And hey, I hope I get proven wrong, because it would be some shit to see Connor win that fight and flip the world on its head and become like an international superstar, even beyond what he is now. That would be fucking insane. But I don't see that happening. I don't think Connor has a chance. Do you?
Well, you know what? A small fractional percentage. Just, you know, we really have discounted. I know myself, I've discounted McGregor quite a few different points in his career. I mean, my goodness, almost every step along the way, almost, you know, before the Mendez fight, before the Aldo fight, before so many fights, just said, you know, this is not going to end well for him. I was correct on that in my prediction in his first encounter with Nate Diaz. But typically speaking, against guys his height, his size, his weight, at 145 and 155 pounds, he has destroyed them all. And he claims to have a good knowledge of the distance, and he does. You know, you see this in his fights. He's got a firm grasp on the distance, much more so than the great majority of mixed martial artists. And he's displayed that in taking out everybody not named Nate Diaz in the UFC that he's faced. Now, if he's able to apply that to boxing, if he's able to apply a strategy where perhaps he's forcing Mayweather to come at him and he's trying to counterpunch and getting Mayweather to be the aggressor, perhaps he could use his gift of range and sneak an opening and maybe land some effective shots and maybe have a good strategy there. But I don't know how you do that. Nobody's been able to do that with Floyd Mayweather. Maybe McGregor could be the one, but it's just so unlikely that someone with zero amateur or professional boxing experience can come in and dethrone one of the pound-for-pound best that boxing has ever seen. Granted, Conor McGregor in his short time is one of the pound-for-pound best that mixed martial arts has seen. I mean, winning two belts very quickly in the UFC the way he did. He's done very amazing things himself, and you know, the two sports aren't entirely dissimilar. Both very world class. But I think the money line is right about where it should be on this one. Like you touched on, Jake, Floyd is just so hard to hit. Even
minus 1100,
and that's why I say, like, really, Connor will have to get Floyd being the aggressor, because that Philly shell, almost impenetrable. He has to catch Floyd swinging and missing to really put something on him. Or I don't know. Maybe he can't get creative enough with the combos. But if McGregor comes out there with a complete disregard for his life and just really brings the fight to him, like I think a lot of people thought Canelo would when they matched up, maybe he can make it a brawl, and maybe he can make something out of it. But yeah, I'm giving McGregor about a 10% chance in this one.
Floyd's Philly shell, like the captain of the cheerleading team, almost impenetrable. All right, one more thing I want to toss around in this Floyd Connor thing, which is the only reason I probably sound like a party pooper here, because yes, it will be a spectacle. Will it help MMA or boxing? That's to be seen. I think you could make arguments both ways probably about it. But as far as the reason, yes, it'll be fun. Yes, I will be paying a lot of attention to it. But the reason I am coming across like such a sour ass, I think, is because I am afraid that this will mean the end of Connor's UFC career, because the UFC is only going to be able to pay Connor, what, 5 or 10 mil a fight? Like, I think against Eddie, he made around there. And that's probably what he will make for subsequent fights. I think his ceiling, I think he's kind of reached the ceiling for what an MMA fighter can be and make and generate. So he fights Floyd. He makes this $100 million paycheck. If you just made $100 million, why in the hell would you go back to the UFC to take on a killer like Khabib Nurmagomedov or Jose Aldo or Max Holloway or Tony Ferguson or whoever it might be, or Nate Diaz, all of these killers? Why would you go back to a sport to fight a killer for 5 mil again when you have 100 mil in the bank? His motivation would need to be pride-based, because money-wise, he's going to lose all incentive to go back to the UFC. And it sounds like from interviews and from things he's said, it sounds like he's pretty driven by the money. It sounds like the money is what's important to him. So if he has 9 figures in the bank, why the hell would he put his brains on the line, his body on the line, go fight in the UFC to expand your bank account? By what? To make it go from 112 million to 118? Like, that's nothing. I hope he comes back, because I really think he has so much skill. I don't want his career to be a flash in the pan like a Ronda Rousey or a Brock Lesnar. But I feel like that's what, you know, all of them will kind of forever be linked, having you know, a multi-sport discipline. Ronda with judo, Brock with wrestling, Connor now with boxing, and all being mega huge and popular during their peak, and all having relatively short careers. I guess Connor's would be the most successful toward the end. Brock's kind of ended with a loss and a failed steroid test. Ronda's, if she hangs her gloves up, will have ended with 2 losses. Connor did lose to Nate, but ended up coming back and getting revenge for that loss, beating Nate, and then becoming the sport's 3rd multi-weight champion, beating Eddie in quick fashion. I mean, you know, the guy beat Aldo in 13 seconds and then went up and took the lightweight belt. Pretty incredible what he has done And, I mean, just, it was 4 years ago. The guy was fighting in Boston, making 8-8. 8,000 to show, 8,000 to win. And now he is staring a nine-figure payday against Floyd Mayweather in the face. It's a crazy world. You have anything else before we move on to this UFC Auckland card that went down, headlined by the Super Samoan Mark Hunt and the Black Beast? I feel racist every time I say his nickname, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis.
Yeah, can we really say that? I don't.
I mean, yeah,
I guess.
I mean, it is.
We have to.
We have to. If we didn't, that would be racist.
Right? Nah, see, there we go. We're all about equality here on the MMA podcast. Let's forget the freak show. Let's get into the real fights.
Let's get into the fights. It was a fun card. I did not catch the one Fight Pass card, J.J. Aldrich defeating Chan Mee Jian. The Fox Sports 1 prelims, a few decisions. I actually tuned in during the Luke Jumo and Dominic Steele decision. Jumo, John Moraga, and Zach Ottow all winning decisions. And then I saw Vince From Hell Pichel come back. I think he had taken like 3 years off. Comes back and gets a KO win against Damian Brown. Calls out all the people who have beat him in the past, I think he said. Al Iaquinta, too, who beat him in the Tough House. The guy, he's got an impressive record. 10-1 was on that season of Tough, that Tough live season before losing to Al Iaquinta in the third round. His only loss came to Rustam Khabilov in 2012. So we might see some action out of From Hell Pichel. And then I guess we can talk about the beginning of the main card. Alexander Volkanovski winning a decision over Mizuta Hirota in a fight that I honestly forget. I don't remember that fight at all. Probably pretty boring. I wasn't even drinking either. I watched this card straight up sober and I don't remember it. Ben Wynn getting a nice rear naked choke against Tim Elliott just a minute in. Mighty Mouse had 25 minutes to finish Tim Elliott and couldn't do it. Ben Wynn does it in under a minute. And Ion Kutalba, I'm sure I said his name incorrectly, the 205er, the young light heavyweight, you don't hear that very often, getting a KO win, looking pretty good there, rebounding against his loss against Jared Cannonier. What did you think of the action in the prelims, the first half of the main card? Were you able to catch most of these fights?
Oh yeah, I was definitely watching attentively, and very solid action. Great scraps all the way through. Few decisions on there. I mean, the first four fights went to decision, but pretty entertaining. Let's see. Really, Vince Pichel, though, as you mentioned, that was a really highlight. Really helped to kickstart the action. Five fights in with the finish over Damian Brown, and good to see him get the W. Been out for 3 years. Gosh, I never really even got the full scoop as to whether it was injury or what it was that kept him out for so long. But back in, and great TKO to reintroduce himself to all the UFC fans. Hirota versus Volkanovski, I thought that was a pretty good fight. Back and forth, everybody throwing some bombs. I was pretty surprised with Volkanovski. It was a very good showing. Very surprised with Ben Wynn coming out in front of his hometown crowd, submitting Tim Elliott like it was nothing. I was quite frankly shocked. I don't know if Tim Elliott had put a lot of money on himself to lose that fight by submission or what was going on, but that seemed just like the most absolute noob. Just the way he let his neck get snatched up like that, just couldn't believe it. Fantastic job by Ben Wynn, capitalizing and looking great in front of the hometown crowd. he had mentioned in his in the post fight interview that his wife, I believe, I don't want to say his girlfriend, I want to say he said his wife, or anyways, had a fight the night prior, and he said, oh yeah, she won by decision the night before, so I had to come out here and get the win tonight, so I didn't get locked out of the house. I thought that was pretty good. He can go home a victor, head held high, coming through as a big underdog against Elliott. Yeah, and then Kutaleba versus Da Silva, fantastic. Had me flashing back to Vanderlei Silva versus Keith Jardine. Any of the old school fans, they might remember this particular fight where Vanderlei had dropped Jardine, and then while Jardine was on the ground, Vanderlei just grabs him by the throat and starts punching him in the face till he goes unconscious. About exactly what happened in the Kutaleba Da Silva fight. Ion comes out super fast. I mean, they were both swinging those things really early. Kutaleba hit him on the feet early. He was seemed like he was stunned. He was backpedaling. He didn't want any part of that, and got clipped on the chin, fell down, and Ion just same maneuver, grabbed him by the throat, just kept punching until that body went limp. It was particularly savage, and yeah, good some good action there, as was the savage KO of Hooker over Pearson. Great stuff there. Man, I was really banking on my boy, the real deal, Ross Pearson. He was looking good through the first the first round there, but man, got caught something fierce by Hooker. Great action, really. I was pretty pleased with the card overall.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think it's, you know, I think there's some correlation between a really exciting, pumped up crowd and exciting fights. Because we saw some fun ass fights, and those last three were all mint and memorable. I want to talk about two of them, the Dan Hooker and Derek Brunson KOs. Dan Hooker just lands this perfect knee. It was, man, there are KOs every now and then that you just hate to watch because they're so brutal, and the strike lands with such, I mean, you, it just, you got, you kind of bear down on your teeth and cringe because you're like, how does a human skull take that kind of damage? Yeah, Dan Hooker landing a knee right up the middle, knocking Ross Pearson out, sending his mouthpiece across the canvas. I forget who I was watching the fight with, but they said, damn, Pearson needs to hang it up. Ross Pearson now, I believe in his last four fights, he's winless. He lost to Francisco Trinaldo, got a split decision over Chad Laprise, and now has lost to Will Brooks, Jorge Masvidal, Stevie Ray, and Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker on the other side, losing to Yair Rodriguez and Jason Knight in his last couple of losses, which aren't very bad losses when you really consider that those are probably two of the brightest stars at 145. New Zealander Hooker, he is pretty tall for 145, or no, he's at 155 now, but he's 6 feet tall. I expect to see him get some more quality opponents. And Derek Brunson, he was on a 2-fight losing streak after beating Uriah Hall. He lost to Robert Whittaker and a unanimous decision to Anderson Silva at UFC 208. Gets back in the win column, knocking out the very durable Dan Kelly in the first round. Just showing that incredible power. Dude has a lot of first round knockouts. And you can add Dan Kelly to the list. Derek Brunson getting back to his old ways. What did you make of the KOs by Hooker, Brunson, and then we'll get to Hunt in a second here?
Man, well, they were all Hooker and Brunson KOs. Man, very very devastating. I was I actually had predicted Derek Brunson by round one TKO in that fight, so wasn't too surprised. I mean, Kelly, he's a tough fighter, tough guy, but man, Brunson has just been doing some special things since he came over to the UFC. And ever since he's bounced back from his loss to Yoel Romero, I thought it was a very, very good performance for Brunson. Daniel Hooker, though, that was a fight where really whoever you were talking to that suggested that Ross Pearson may want to hang him up, this was that fight where I was kind of, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say that Pearson is shot just because of this fight. I mean, Hooker's a tough obstacle, definitely tall for the lightweight division, as you mentioned. I mean, that's one of the things that facilitated these knees. And that's, Pearson was looking pretty good in that fight. He was looking pretty sharp. His movement was good. I think it's just more of a testament to the young, rangy up-and-comer at Daniel Hooker, more so than it is Pearson losing a step. I mean, I don't know, but you mentioned he hasn't won a fight in some time. It's I don't know. It may be time to start considering doing something else, because this was finally a matchup where you would say this is rankings appropriate for Ross Pearson, considering the career trajectory, and to then drop this one as well. I mean, yeah, it may be time to look elsewhere for employment. Can't fault Daniel Kelly for faltering against Derek Brunson. That's just a tough matchup to get in front of your hometown crowd. But Derek Brunson, big props to him winning the fights he's supposed to fight, winning the fights he's supposed to win. And great performances in both KOs there.
Man, the last time he strung two straight wins together were Ryan Couture and George Soteropoulos, which you haven't heard that name in a while, back in 2012, 2013. So it's been a while. It's been, let's see, since those two wins, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 fights. Unable to string two wins in a row. This is loss number 4 in a row. So I don't know what is next for Ross Pearson. But, dude, I mean, he's had a hell of a career. Like, shit, he, hats off to him for sure. Main event, I took Lewis. You took Hunt. You were correct. Mark Hunt in the fourth round. And, I mean, this fight, really the story of this fight was Derek Lewis's chin and how much damage can one man take. Mark Hunt was just landing these bombs after bomb after bomb. If it had gone the full 25 minutes, Hunt easily would have won. But in the fourth round, Hunt finally lands a combo and puts Derek Lewis out via TKO. I don't know what else to say other than, Lewis, after just absorbing a few of those bombs, kind of the defense went out the window. Lewis had moments of his own. The 32-year-old, for sure fired back, but it was the 43-year-old from South Auckland, New Zealand, the Super Samoan, getting the win. Derek Lewis said he was retiring when the fight was over, likely going to retire. Mark Hunt afterwards hinted toward a retirement, said if this was his last fight, he would have been happy, but I don't know. I believe he still has some fights left and probably will fight again. But yeah, Hunt, who was, seemed to be in a bit of trouble there. He had only two wins in his last six fights. But getting back in the win column against Derek Lewis, which the heavyweight division is such a giant question mark. Every time you have someone seemingly new who hasn't been around for a while, they just get knocked back down the totem pole by an old-timer. And the 43-year-old Super Samoan does it again. Fight of the night, TKO, fourth round, 3 minutes 51 in. What are your thoughts, man?
Oh, man. Well, you know what? This certainly could have gone either way. But Mark Hunt, with that K-1 Grand Prix experience in this fight, knowing it was primarily just going to be a striking battle, I mean, I had to go with Old Mark in this one, and the Super Samoan came through. It was not the prettiest fight. I mean, really, I'd say, what, about 2 minutes into the first round, both guys are sucking wind, and automatically it just, I don't know, for me it just became one of those things. It's just a battle of attrition at that point. And Mark Hunt, with his striking pedigree, he was able to put it on Lewis fairly successfully. I mean, that fourth round TKO was mostly just due to exhaustion more than anything. Mark Hunt really seemed to be the only one with anything in the tank left. He was able to muster up the energy to punch Derek Lewis in the face. So by virtue of that, he won. But man, both these guys, you know, iron chins, certainly no quit in either of them. It was a good showing for Mark Hunt. You know, it looks like he's saying he doesn't want to retire, wants to run it back with Alistair Overeem. Derek Lewis, I'm sure he doesn't want to retire. That's that might have just been some emotions immediately after the fight. But he's certainly one of the brighter stars in the heavyweight division. I think he's got a lot of success to look forward to. No shame in losing to Mark Hunt, who's a legend in the sport. But no, I think we'll be seeing both guys. Mark Hunt, I don't know how much longer, but I would like to think we'll be seeing both of them for at least a couple more fights.
Especially in such a thin heavyweight division, I don't think you can afford to lose either guy. What else do we got? I guess that's all we got for UFC Auckland, unless you got something else. Nope, doesn't sound like it. Let's move on.
No, don't think so.
All right, Goldie. Not only Goldie, but Mauro Ranallo. Mike Goldberg and Mauro Ranallo, both signed by Bellator, by Scott Coker. They're not going to be on the same broadcasting team. What I'm assuming is they're going to put Goldberg as their play-by-play guy, along with Jimmy Smith on color. That will probably be their A team, their broadcast team. And I bet they give Mauro Ranallo sort of like how the UFC will have the guys ringside and then guys up in the booth at the table. I think Mauro is good in a role at the table in the booth, kind of narrating your broadcast, while Goldie is your play-by-play guy, Jimmy Smith on color, and I guess they join a bunch of other people, including Chael Sonnen over there on that Bellator broadcast team, and I guess they will all be starting in about a week and a half, a card we're going to preview next week on the MMA podcast, Bellator 180. That's a card I'm very excited for. You got Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva if Juan doesn't back out. You got Fedor versus Mitrione. You got a couple title defenses, I think, with Chandler and one of the Pit Bulls or something. And I think the debut of Aaron Pico. It will be worth a watch for sure. But yeah, Goldie, I mean, this is a genius move because, I mean, you know, what do mainstream fans associate with MMA and UFC and seeing clips? They probably think of Mike Goldberg's voice. It is all over. I mean, he has so, you know, many calls. We are liar. That's Bruce Buffer. Holy shit. Too much green medicine before the show. No, what does he do? He does. He's you know, his voice and a lot of the things he says are very recognizable, and I think that voice being on a Bellator broadcast is going to do nothing but help. Mauro has been all around. He's done boxing. He's done wrestling. I think recently left the WWE due to some, like, bullying. I know Mauro has a history of mental health issues, and I think the story was that John Bradshaw was like bullying him or something. I don't know. You can Google the whole story if you're interested, but kind of wild over there. But yeah, both of them heading to Bellator now. Scott Coker signing them. I think this is a great move. And, you know, I was starting to miss Goldie. I think the UFC was mistaken in letting him go. And I'm looking forward to seeing him over on Spike.
Well, you know, quite debatable as to whether or not, you know, it was a good decision or not for the UFC to let him go. Goldie, certainly a lot of fans had a love-hate relationship with Mike Goldberg. I mean, he had been the voice of the UFC for so long, but at a certain point, there were so many gaffes, so many flubs on the mic, and just, I don't know, just a lot of questionable calls, really. And it had just gotten to be a joke at a certain point. And, I still question why, well, I don't know. I think they have a long way to go as far as their play by play, crew and stuff like that. It's some of the guys are better on the mic and better live than others. And, I don't know. I think they still have to work a little bit of that out, but, man, Goldberg going to Bellator, I don't know if that's going to help or hurt Bellator. Ronaldo is a great move, getting him over there to Bellator. I don't really know why you need to do both. I guess it's a good thing, though, and smart of them to not put them on the same team. I feel like if Ronaldo was having problems at the WWE with JBL, it seems like he may have serious problems working with Goldberg. But I don't know. That's just my assessment from the outside looking in. I'm certainly, you know, I don't know. Sometimes Goldberg, I certainly have a love-hate relationship with him. It can be excruciating sometimes listening to him when he makes these giant errors in his calls. But so many of us grew up listening to him in the UFC. You know, it's good to hear that familiar voice. I don't know. Let's see how it does first. I'm more excited about Bellator signing Ronaldo, though.
Well, I'm more stoked about them signing Goldberg. So go fuck yourself, Pete Honey.
Well, how do you like that?
What else is going on? Uriah Faber announced on the MMA Hour that Sage Northcutt was joining Team Alpha Male, and the tweet from Jed Goodman. I believe all the shirtless selfies probably helped his cause. Yeah, not really a big shocker here. Sage seems like just the kind of fighter who would join Team Alpha Male. And, you know, I mean, all jokes aside, seems like a nice kid, so let's see if he's able to improve his game over there. Let's see how he does.
He was already on Team Alpha Male. That's,
yeah, right?
It is a perfect fit.
Let's get to this weekend's card. Not the most stacked card. It'll be, I messed up last week and said that the UFC Auckland card would be at a weird time before I corrected myself. I was thinking about this card. This card is going to be at a very weird time. It is going to be Saturday for us. But it'll also be Saturday for the people in Singapore, which means it's going to be Saturday morning for us. In fact, if you're up late Friday night, the prelims will start at 1:45 a.m. Pacific, 4:45 a.m. Eastern, the main card kicking off at 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific. Unless you are a giant fan of one of the people on the card, or just a super hardo, you're probably going to end up DVRing these fights. Some interesting names, interesting fights for sure. We're only going to break down the main card, but the prelims do have some names on them. Takanori Gomi against John Tuck. Alex Caceres is on there. Yeah, through the prelims and the main card, it seems like a common theme are fighters with recognizable names who have not been doing good recently. I think I saw on Twitter there was a spat between Mike Bonn, an MMA reporter, and the Twitter account for UFC Fight Pass. They were actually going back and forth, arguing about the quality of the UFC Singapore card. Of course, it started with Mike Bonn kind of calling out the UFC Singapore card for being weak. And out of all people, the UFC Fight Pass Twitter responds back and, like, took a shot at him about, like, having skid marks or something. Like, the only, I think Bond said, like, oh, you know, the fighters are all on skids. And then it was like, oh, the only skids are in your underwear or something. And I think the final line was when the UFC Fight Pass account says, oh, there's three former UFC champions, a former title contender, and a former Pride champ all on this card. And Mike Bonn goes, yeah, and they're all 0-15 in their most recent fights. So you have a lot of fighters coming off losses here, including in your main event. But, I guess let's start with the main card. Tarek Saffiedine, Rafael Dos Anjos, interesting. Dong Young Kim versus Colby Covington, interesting. Andre Arlovsky versus Marcin Tybura, very interesting there. These are fights that, I guess a lot of these fighters can't really afford to lose. You have Dos Anjos, the former champion at lightweight, who dropped his last two to Eddie Alvarez and Tony Ferguson, now moving up to 170 to fight Tarek Saffiedine himself, who has lost his last two against Rick Story and Dong Young Kim. Kim fighting in the next fight. He really seems to be the only person with a good streak going. He's won 7 of his last 8 and is on a 3-fight winning streak. The only loss in his last 8 fights, the current champion, Tyron Woodley. He's taking on a Colby Covington, who's on a 3-fight winning streak, most recently against Brian Barberena. And then the co-main event between Andre Arlovsky and Marcin Tybura. Andre was on that crazy 6-fight winning streak before going up against Stipe Miocic, which began a 4-fight losing streak to Stipe, Alistair, Josh Barnett, and Francis Ganeau. All of those losses finishes. Marcin Tybura, 2-1 since joining the UFC, losing his first, winning his last two against Victor Pesta and Luis Henrique. If I check the odds here, bestfightodds.com, Dong Young Kim is actually an underdog to Colby Covington, who's at -320. I like Kim there. Arlovsky +210 to Tybura's -250. I kind of like Arlovsky there too. And between Dos Anjos and Saffiedine, I like Dos Anjos, but Saffiedine I think as well is a live dog. What do you think about those three fights before we break down the main event and put a bow on it?
Yeah, I definitely like those fights. Definitely some notable action on the main card for sure. I mean, Dos Anjos versus Saffiedine. This is going to be a good fight for Dos Anjos. I mean, coming from the belt, tough loss to Alvarez. Had another very tough fight against Tony Ferguson. So Tarek Saffiedine, a good matchup for him. They're both, you know, at a similar place right now. Tarek coming off a couple losses, also trying to get right. Good scrap, man. Both of them like to strike. Dos Anjos has a ground game. Saffiedine, I want to say, a little bit of a larger opponent. Tough one for me to call. I think Saffiedine's being slept on a little bit in this one. I might actually go with him to beat Dos Anjos. And as far as Covington versus Kim, should be a good one as well. Again, this is really the fight with probably the most winningest fighters, if you could even say that. I mean, Kim and Covington both on 3-fight win streaks. I'm probably favoring Covington in this one. Let's see how the travel and the time difference affects him, but 11-1 in his career. Covington definitely seems to be a prospect on the rise. Kim has a lot of experience in big name fights, so you know what? Actually, screw it. No, I said Covington. I'm going with Covington. Not going to make the last minute switch. We all know how that screwed us over many times. That's anyone who picks anything yep. really knows about that last yep. minute switch. You got to go with the gut. So I'm sticking with Covington. Damn it. Arlovsky versus Tybura. I feel like I might as well flip a coin with that one. I'm probably leaning Tybura. He's actually got a couple W's under his belt. But no one to the pedigree of Andre Arlovsky. He hasn't really came up against the competition that Arlovsky has. I want to say Tybura lost to Tim Johnson in 2016. Tim Johnson, a solid fighter himself, a very scrappy individual, but certainly, again, not even at the level of a Stipe Miocic and Alistair Overeem and Josh Barnett. Perhaps up there with Francis Ngannou. I can't say, I don't know. Ngannou has put together a much better career for himself than Tim Johnson in the UFC anyway. So I feel like Andre Arlovsky has both beaten and lost to considerably tougher opponents than Tybura. Tough one. I want to go with the young blood, but damn it, I don't want to sleep on Arlovsky either. I'm taking the pit bull just for old time's sake. I think he gets back to his winning ways, gets a knockout, although I really probably shouldn't pick that. Just did, so. Hoping probably for the Belarusian.
Just did. The main event, I don't think either of us are going to pick the underdog, bitch Kohea. She has one win in her last four, losing to Ronda Rousey and Rocky Pennington, defeating Jessica Eye, and then in her most recent fight, scoring a draw with Marion Renault. Facing Holly Holm, who won the belt against Rousey before losing three in a row to Miesha Tate, Valentina Shevchenko, and then losing a fight for the featherweight championship against Jermaine de Randamie. I believe this will be a bantamweight scrap. Holm moving back to 135. I don't know what the status of that women's 145 division is, because there was like one fight and Randamie beat Holm, and now Randamie is saying she's not gonna fight Cyborg, so I don't know if they're gonna like strip the belt from De Randamie and make Cyborg versus Megan Anderson for the women's featherweight belt or what, but I don't know, it's screwy. Randamie first claimed an injury, and now she's just straight up refusing to fight Cyborg, which I guess Cyborg was initially reportedly popped for a USADA, a potential USADA violation, and I think she's been cleared, so she's actually not in trouble and will be able to fight, so we'll see what happens there. But what we have on the table in front of us, Holly Holm against bitch Kohea. Holm, one of the best strikers in women's MMA, one of the best female boxers of all time, and moves over to MMA, starts her career undefeated, 10-0, since then winless. So she is looking to get back in the win column, and I think she will. She's a big favorite, minus 600 against bitch. They have the over-under at 4.5 rounds, which is fair, I think. You see a lot of women's bantamweight and strawweight fights go to a decision, even when you have a couple of strikers like Holm and bitch. You know, I mean, this is striker versus striker. You have Holm, who not only possesses more tools, you know, she uses knees and kicks more, but she is for sure more patient, more technical, leaves herself open a lot less than bitch, who seems to almost be like the Leonard Garcia of women's bantamweight, kind of just goes and throws, and it's enough to beat a lot of shitty opponents, but I don't know, aside from, yeah, I mean, her really... Her only really impressive win was against Jessica I, and that was in a string of, I think, like, six losses for I or something. So, I don't think Kohea is that legit. I think Holm is, has got a lot more skill, and I think she wins this fight easily. If it goes to a decision, it's one-sided. But I actually think Holm finishes this in the second or third round with strikes. Who you got in this one?
You know what? The only reason this is even not just a landslide for Holm for me is... Well, no, actually, it still is. I'm picking Holm all day and all night. I don't care if she's jet-lagged as shit. She's taking out Beth Kohea. That's I really just don't see how she doesn't even in... I mean, we talk about she's... her last three fights, she's winless. The first three losses of her MMA career, all coming in a row. The loss to Misha Tate, she was winning that fight. At least in pretty much everybody's estimation, that fight was this close to going to the scorecards, and she was pretty much handling that after some early adversity, came back and was poised to win that on the scorecards and just got choked out of nowhere in the fifth. The Shevchenko fight really can make no bones about that. She got tooled. The Durandamay loss, Durandamay almost knocked her out after the bell, after the second fucking round. That was a fucking ridiculous fight. Crazy affair. Holm still did really well. I don't know. I want to say that was a split decision or I'd have to double check, but that was still a very close fight. I feel considering just all the bullshit that went down in that fight. So, you know, Holm, I could see her record being a bit different right now. I could see her being 12-1 instead of 10-3 if there were just some different factors there. But then again, those losses ended up on her record. So, I don't know. I'm still taking her over Kohea for sure. Like, she's just more technically sound, has things more in the bag, has the cam. I want to say... should have a little bit of height and reach, although Kohea is a fairly good size women's bantamweight herself. But this is going to be Holm's fight for sure. I think her high level experience and her high level wins, she's going to take this all day. She's had way more success at this level than Kohea, and I think she's going to get back in the win column come Saturday morning or Saturday evening, depending on your locality.
Indeed, and I think that's all I got on the docket, unless you got anything else. And once again, I guess you don't.
Well, we had some minor notes, you know, nothing too crazy in there. But always good getting on the horn with you, Jake, and breaking down the scraps with the people. Love talking the action with you, and thank you for having me this wonderful Wednesday evening.
He's on Twitter at SweetPappyJones. Why don't you go and give him a follow? Why don't you go and give me a follow at Sweet? Or I'm not at SweetPappyJones. He's at SweetPappyJones. I'm at the MMA Podcast. Somehow a stupid idiot like me was able to find themmapodcast.com, and then I just squatted on all of it. Twitter, Facebook, Gmail, you can find me at the MMA Podcast. What else? We'll be back next week breaking down a bunch of stuff. Bellator breaking down UFC Fight Night Oklahoma, Chiesa versus Lee. What else? We'll probably have a little more info on this Conor Floyd. I'm sure there'll be more developments in that. Don't worry, we won't talk about it every week. But you know what? Like always, we appreciate the shit out of you. Stay healthy, keep your nose to the grindstone, and until next week, we gone.
Now, Jake, tune into the MMA Podcast every Tuesday night.
My God, yo.
The wild style, always been a foul child.
Will I, sucker? I be the coming, yeah. Like Noah.
the MMA podcast. Jake is the host, and since Ramsey's been in a wheelchair, the Aunt Jimmy show has been on a roll. I wanna say John Jones is a host, so I think that I'll pick up the phone and dial 213-457-3380. We got hot takes on the stove. You get blood on your clothes if you're sitting in the front row. I throw on my gi and then I lace the hoops. I'll have Gal lying down cause he ain't the truth. And if Allen wasn't a cop, I'd mention you. And shout out to Ross Finkelstein the Jew. Cause according to you, you're an MMA guru. A Rube Bisping lost his hands, Count Dooku. If you're a fancy boy, you get a 2-minute slot. Mystery wants a title shot. So listen to the MMA podcast. Throw a high kick, but I flop that. Call me Diaz, screaming George, where you at? I want the strap, but you know that I'll never tap. So listen to the MMA podcast. Throw a high kick, but I flop that. Call me Diaz, screaming George, where you at? I want the strap, can you know that I won't tap? Mystery. The MMA podcast. Most of us just live and breathe this fighting shit. Shout out to Jake. Shout out to Jake.